Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, welcome back to another weekend roundup. As always, brought to you by sportsshoes.com. And boy, what a weekend it is, because we had some crazy results over the weekend. But Matt, we got to start with Bucks, don't we? Bronze medal for those Oxford boys. Apologies to anyone who did get a bit excited on an Oxford win. That's George Wheeler's fault. So message him on Instagram if you've got any complaints about Instagram posts. But mate, Bucks was great as always, wasn't it?
Throw Wheeler under the bus. Yeah, it was fantastic, actually. And a ridiculous atmosphere. I think, like, those who weren't there, I don't know how it came across on socials, but I don't think it sort of showcased the atmosphere as well as what it was. I mean, it was just deafening the whole way around. It was a really, really good course for spectators. It was a good course for the race as well. It was 10 out of 10. It's everything you want and everything you expect from a Bucks weekend, to be honest. And yeah, you're right. Two bronzes for us in the men's, in the short course and long course, which was good, showcasing the depth. And the women came super close in both the short course and the long course as well. We were 4 points off of Loughborough for a medal in that women's long course. And to be fair, that was a little bit unexpected. They really punched above their weight, I think, going to that. So yeah, as a coach, very, very pleased. I think it's good to be in the hunt, you know, 2 years in a row now. And to be fair, I think we came into this with quite high expectations as well, especially in the men's long course. I think we were hoping to really kind of stretch Birmingham and hopefully beat Loughborough again. But it was, it didn't quite play out that way. And that men's race was a funny race where it was so deep. I haven't seen a cross race like that in a while, in a sense that there were six men in going into the last half a mile of a cross race. And usually, you know, in cross country, it's very much, you know, it's not all said and done. I know there's definitely some changes a little bit further down the field in the last half a mile. But, you know, up front, you've usually got, you know, everyone's kind of 20 meters adrift of each other. It's single file and everyone's just kind of battling. But the races has kind of already unfolded. But it just, you know, and it wasn't because it was slow. It was just a weird course, in a sense. It was just very busy for so long. And certainly for our guys, it just meant it was a wrestling match for so much of that race. If you were basically not in the top five, basically on that kind of front row where you were fanning out, or just the row behind, it was very tough. It was very busy. Every turn was a scrap. Every narrow section in the woods was a scrap. And I think if you were there, it was exhausting, basically, because the footing was soft and sapping as well. You're constantly having to just, you know, you're just up and down on the gas.
Yeah, we did predict that, didn't we, mate, in terms of how the course would play out and the weather and things like that. Yeah. And it gets extremely sticky round that course.
Use the word,
and
yeah.
As everyone who ran on there would know. But even just looking at, particularly in the men's side, right, even if you just look at the finishing time. So Temer, 31:47. Mm-hmm. And then down in 20th place, you're 32:31. So that's a crazy spread for a top 20 in terms of how close it is at the top. Like, when you compare that to the women's, Jess Bailey rounds 26:27 for the win. Mm-hmm. And you're already kind of a minute off that by sixth place, Emily Parker, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, the amount of men that would have been kind of battling right to the end, like you can just see even just from the finish times, mate, as well.
It's so true.
But it's good. It's good, isn't it? Because that's what we see in America every year, and we want those types of races where the depth is like that.
There was just nothing to break it up. Like, if there's a, you know, if there's a hill in a cross country course, everyone is slightly different when it comes to a hill, ability wise. Some get up them a bit quicker, some take their time, and it just naturally strings things out. There was nothing to string it out at Bucks. And I think maybe up front as well, like someone like Tamay, he was always going to leave it till quite late. He probably didn't want to you know, at Liverpool, where he's like, right, I'm gonna really push on to try and take it to these guys. He probably didn't feel the need to do that. You know, so he was just being a little bit more patient, which in turn, you know, he's just got everyone on his shoulder. But it reminded me, like, if all of those guys raced on 10K on the roads, it would be kind of on a tactical 10K, not like a pace 10K. It would be, you know, chock-a-block. And yeah, you talk about the NCAAs. There was, you know, at points you're thinking could probably have done with widening up the course, but hey, it added to the excitement, I think, which was good. And yeah, you talk about the gaps though, but credit to Tabella, he did sort of, when it really got going with sort of 400 to go, he did pull away and had plenty in the locker. And got to give credit to Ollie Smart as well, because I mean, he turns up at Bucks 2 years on the bounce, he's got third, and maybe it's harsh saying this, but it's kind of, yeah, he always just basically produces his best when it comes to Bucks.
Yeah, I think me and you, obviously after the race on Saturday, we kind of sat down and we were having a bit of a chat about Bucks, and we were sort of saying, unless you are maybe someone like Tamer is at that level, but like particularly like your Barnico, you don't see there, unless you are competing on that kind of world stage or looking to make serious GB teams for 3 years, Bucks should be your priority, really.
That's our view anyway. Everyone there, I really do think it was, you know, and Loughborough really, really performed as well, and they had huge depth as well. So I think it's fair to say for everyone at Bucks, it definitely is. I do know you do get the stars, but you know, you look at Birmingham, you've got two individual winners and both stars right now. So yeah, and on the women's side, yeah, Jess Bailey did dominate. I thought she might come under a little bit more pressure, but she cruised round, to be honest, and just stretched away and looked very, very good. But credit where credit's due. Cambridge women were just insane. They packed so well. And we did kind of build them up to possibly take that team title.
Yeah.
I do think they were favourites, but again, they delivered really, really well.
Yeah, for sure. And just to kind of, I guess, wrap up all those team results. So obviously in the long courses, so your main events, right? Birmingham men took the win, Loughborough second, and obviously Oxford in third place. And on the women's, Cambridge took the win with Birmingham second and Loughborough third. So those two big universities, mate, the nerdy unis, Oxford and Cambridge, mixing it with Birmingham and Loughborough's, and St Mary's nowhere to be seen these days.
It's maybe a bit unfair. They definitely were. They ran, they got fourth in the men's long. They packed well in both the women's races as well, so they are, and I think St Mary's are actually, obviously they've got that TAS program down there now, and I think they are starting to build back up and certainly build something. So I think, yeah, and of course Mia Waldman, who was actually running Jess Bailey pretty close for a lot of this race and was the one in second, was the one who sort of went with her, just faded at the end, and Poppy Tank managed to reel her in. But you know, she had a great performance for an individual medal as well. So I think they will be back around soon. But what's exciting is you are starting to see, I think, sort of four or five unis starting to just get in the hunt. And one of the easiest Cambridge have obviously finished on top in the women's race, and that's huge. And I think we would love to go and get a gold in the women's or the men's race in the next few years as well. But I think most importantly as well, we're just starting to see more depth from other unis. And look, the women's A race, there's conversations about potentially trying to level that up and have four to score. What people think of that, I'm intrigued. Because obviously, three to score, it's almost potentially a bit more appealing for smaller unis to really get. I mean, Cambridge women would have smashed it anyway if it was four to score. But, you know, I think we mentioned, didn't we, if Exeter, like someone like Innes Fitzgerald turns up and she gets that low stick, you know, and she wins or, you know, gets top three, which would definitely happen. You're then like, well, Exeter only need a couple of other strong athletes to try and finish in and around that 10-15 mark, and it's going to put them in the hunt for a team medal or possibly a team win. So I think that is quite appealing. Where when it's four to score, it gets a little bit trickier for other unis outside of those big two, three, who just have a massive recruiting pool and just huge membership numbers to compete. But at the same time, it's, you know, I guess that drives the depth, right? And I look at it and I think it should be four to score. And yeah, initially it might be again just favoring the sort of big unis, but eventually I think it is going to just drive that depth. And again, have six in the long race, even out those races a little bit. But
yeah,
I guess it's down, yeah, it's down to those.
We want more unis competing for the titles, but at the same time, you want reward depth, right? Like Loughborough, Birmingham, St Mary's. Like I kind of made the joke about them being nowhere, but they're your traditional big three, right? And they have been for years, and they have earned those spots. Like it's not like they built those programs to be what they are, which is why they get the depth in. So. Yeah, you should be rewarding that in a way. But yeah, I think there is an argument for both. But yeah, I think, like you say, mate, four in the long run probably is a bit better. I think, yeah, while it's three, I think universities like Exeter, they should capitalise, right? They should get some people in and try and build a bit of a team around Innes maybe. Or I'm sure there's some other unis out there that could do similar as well.
I think that is what you want. You want more unis on the map from, you know, so people have a wider pool of unis to pick from where they want to go study, but also they know they're going to have a good athletic setup when they go to these places and they won't be training, you know, kind of completely on your own. And obviously that's why Innes has obviously stayed in Exeter, because that's where her setup is and stuff. So I think that the more competing each year will make it more exciting. And I do feel like Bucks did have that this year. Obviously Cardiff were amazing hosts, but I've got to give credit, and this is me being very biased right now, but honestly, Oxford's fan base, team spirit on the day was just ridiculous. I think, I don't want to say the only uni with the Vuvuzelas, but you know, we had Vuvuzelas, we had drums out. There was a period where I think it was the women's A and all the lads who had done the short course, you know, they've all got Vuvuzelas literally in their mouths, blowing them, making a huge racket as they're going from one diagonal all the way to the bottom corner of the course, and they are absolutely tearing much quicker than they probably got round the 8K course that they just finished. And very proud moment for me, and I think the atmosphere was just, you know, credit to them, it's deafening at times. I couldn't even get information to the girls running round at points because I just had lads in my ear blowing vuvuzela.
Well, yeah, just to confirm to the listeners, this isn't the Oxford Uni Cross Country podcast, and other universities
are.
Well,
it could be a spin-off.
So, yeah, come to Cardiff Met. It's better anyway. So, yeah.
But anyway, so...
Yeah, that wraps up Bucks, mate, doesn't it? Great weekend for cross country. But look, we got to get on to some of this indoor action, because the indoors was absolutely crazy. And we better start with George Mills, really. British record, 7:27. Over 3,000 meters.
Mate, I mean, obviously I was commentating on this and it took me by complete surprise. Like I did not expect, you know, when you're doing your research, you're looking at the start list and you're kind of like, oh, all right, this is cool. Mills is running. He's going to open his season here. I presume he's got a few more races lined up. I presume we're going to see him at the British Champs indoor, stuff like that. And so you don't really know what to expect, especially coming off the back of the summer. He goes quiet, but I mean, flipping hell, this was just, it was insane. Like, you know, I was kind of just a little bit stumped and a little bit lost for words. I mean, he was just, exchanged a few messages with him after. I was like, I wish he gave me the heads up, because he was planning on sending it. He knew what shape he was in. And, you know, so I don't think he was too surprised with how it unfolded. But I think what's impressive, I mean, we see all these times come out of Boston, and we obviously had the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix late that night. Cosgrim ran insanely well for 7:30. So did Melissa Courtney Bryant to break 8:30 in the women's race. But this was no Boston. This was traditional getting after it, in a sense that, you know, he had a pacer for about 1,500. Pacer pulls off, maybe just got him slightly further than 1,500. And yes, he did have the wave lights to key off, but he's running this whole last K on his own, and he's just pouring it on. His last lap, you know, his last 400 was insane. I believe his last K was about 2:24. And it was just all him. And we haven't seen this. I mean, even when Farah used to race, you know, when Farah used to have these setup races and in Birmingham and stuff. And I mean, what did he run? Like a 7:31, 3,000 or something? And I remember that at Birmingham Diamond League, and he did quite a lot of it alone. And you know, he's got a whole crowd behind him, and everyone's, yeah, and this is Farah, like, in his absolute prime. I'm not saying Mills would be beating Farah in his prime, but I'm saying I haven't seen people, the only people I've seen sort of execute races like this and put on displays like this is literally like Jakob, sometimes Farah, but then you're just looking at those Ethiopians, basically, who, you know, and a Cheptegei when he races world records. And it was very reminiscent of that. And you look at the all-time list, Mo Katir's on there, obviously. Gray marker around him, and then it's all Ethiopians. You know, and I remember about, was it sort of 3 years ago? And we had like Aragawi, Barega, Wale, and these guys were absolutely hammering. I think they ran 7:24, 7:25. Some of them even, you know, faded at the end. And all three of them were racing. You're insane. And we were like, what are we watching? This is crazy. So yeah. A year later, Girma goes and breaks the world record, runs 7:23 indoors. But yeah, I mean, I guess we're blowing his trumpet a little bit. But from what I saw from Mills, that was, you know, it was not a Boston. It was far from. It was in a small arena. Yes, there was a good bit of atmosphere. But to do that solo like he did that last K was special.
Yeah, and I think it's just refreshing to see coming off the year he had last year where he ran so well all season. But I think he'd be the first to say that he was kind of bitterly disappointed with his Olympics. Obviously attempting two events, super hard, ended up in that repercharge round. Yeah, had his issues in the five as well. And I think the way he's kind of come out now is he's showing that he is back for more. He is, truly belongs on that world circuit. And I'm just excited to see what happens next. Like, what can you do after opening that? If you open with 7:27, right? The only thing he's got to be going for is medals now.
And I think that's it. And it's funny, you know, the sport used to build and bubble, and athletes would have their classic season openers, and it would just build towards a championship. That doesn't happen anymore. And so, yeah, when you speculate and you're like, what are they going to do now? I mean, he may shock the world and shock us and go and produce, go and attack a world record. Because, you know, to have run 7:27, it wasn't quite January, was it? You know, Feb the 2nd or whatever, indoors and be solo. You are thinking that 7:23, if he has a bit of competition, he's got another race in his legs, he sharpens up a little bit, is attackable. But, you know, you're kind of, your common sense is saying, really? Really? But yeah, the game's changed in a sense that you just don't have, people don't, I mean, look, everyone went over to Boston, which was a few hours after Mills, and again, everyone's running incredible times. I mean, the night before, Ethan Strand goes and runs. Was it the night before? I think it was Saturday night. Ethan Strand goes and runs a 3:48 mile. And you're listening to his interviews and he's like, I've only done 1 mile workout. I haven't done anything hard. I had a week off after my 7:30. And you're just, it's so hard to understand because...
I think it's the way training's changed, though. Yeah. I just think... The way the kind of most of these elites operate now, like, you're just in shape all year round, and it doesn't require that much fine tuning. What requires the fine tuning, right, is winning
tactical races, yeah,
or winning these races where you've got 12 guys running 3:30, that sort of thing. So it might not be tactical, but it's busy and it's scrappy, but it's still quick. But you'd almost, and this is not me trying to take anything away from Mills at all, you'd almost rather have that clean run in a way. If you're in shape and you've got the wave lights, then you'd almost rather have clean track in front of you.
Yeah. I mean,
we said it about Keeley's run in London Diamond League last year.
Yeah.
You throw in someone who is actually competitive, you then don't go push on and you can't relax while you're running like a 2:24 last K like George Mills has, because you're actually worrying about making sure you win the race. But if you know the race is wrapped up, like you say, you can just pour it on. But I think, yeah, fabulous run from Mills, and just excited to see what he can do next, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if we just see him pop up at the champs now, or he maybe drops in a 15 somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any need to run another 3K, apart from those championships.
No, and is he going to be at the championships? You know, is his goal to be European indoor champion? Is his goal to be a world indoor champion? You'd think so, given the fact that he did this. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, training for those tactical races does require, you know, building throughout the season and preparing. I mean, I saw a quote from Centro a little while back, and, you know, that was his career. His career was training for the tactical race, and it paid off. He was the best at it. But he said, you know, people would almost laugh at his, you know, he'd have high schoolers probably laughing at his training right now because a lot of it was geared towards that. And the game has changed. I think another reason the game has changed is obviously these qualifying standards. I mean, the fact that the World Indoor Qualifying Standard is 7:31 for 3,000, it means even the very, very best in the world cannot go, I'm going to do a classic season opener. The very best in the world are having to go, right, where the hell am I going to run very, very fast? This race needs to be set up because I now need to hit this standard. And look, Jay Weimer didn't race, it didn't travel well, so didn't race in Boston. He's obviously made it clear that he wants to compete at the European Indoors. He wants to compete at the World Indoors. But you're thinking, he hasn't got many opportunities to go run, I think, what, is the World Indoors sub 3:33? The qualifying?
Yeah, it's a lot better than 3K, right? But it's not.
Yeah. And so you're like, well, you know, where are you going to do that? You know, you've got the 1,000 lined up at the Keeley Classic. Well, that means nothing. You know, that's almost no use, except, yeah, and he is kind of someone who does build throughout the season, and he's been very good at that, and that's been the way he shaped his seasons.
Again, it's a different type of training, right? Weimer is not one of your, he trains completely differently to George Mills. And that is why. That is why it's very, I guess like very different type of periodization, whereas Mills is training at A level all year round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're not saying one way is better than the other, but yeah, it does produce different types of seasons, right?
Yeah, 3:37 is a Euro standard, so that should be easy enough. Talking of Euro standards, someone who did box off, Tom Keane, he looked very, very impressive. And, you know, I do think 2028, despite how good our 1500 guys are now, like the likes of like Kerr and Gourley and Weimer and Mills and these guys, you know, I do think 2028 will have a few new faces and will have some guys who are big hitters and running well. And, you know, we spoke to George Cootey. I think he's going to be one who's going to be featuring in that sort of timescale. But also Tom Keane, and he's really starting to lay it down on the world stage, and that was a good run from him.
Yeah, and what Tom Keane's done is he's built in like pro experience early in his career by almost like shadowing Weimer in a way. But he's picking up like all those experiences that are going to put him in good stead going forwards. Like, it's not just the training, but like all the meets he goes to, the camps he goes on.
Yeah.
He's developing that kind of nous on terms of like navigating the circuit, if you like. So, yeah, I definitely think some promise there. Let's just maybe wrap up a few more results.
Yeah, there was a lot more results.
Yeah, Adam Fogg, sub 350 in the mile over in Boston. So good to see him clicking away nicely. Westy was 7:37 at New Balance. So PB for him as well. Women's side, probably like, obviously, well, of course, you did mention Melissa Courtney Bryant, 8:28, and for the win at New Balance as well. So great to see her back to her best, to be honest.
She beat him, that was really good. The sport just changes so fast. Like, I know it's only February, but, you know, she's now beating the likes of Cranny, she's beating Parker Valby, she's beating Georgia Bell. I know it's over 3,000, but these ladies were big names in the summer.
Yeah, for sure. And even just, I know Georgia Bell's not a 3K runner, but the way she's put Georgia Bell away, even like last year, like you probably say, oh, Hannah Nuttall, you'd probably be backing Hannah Nuttall going into this race. Or putting him on a par. And Hannah Nuttall's run well as well, like 8:40 is no bad run at all. But yeah, an 8:28 from Melissa Courtney Bryan is brilliant run.
Yeah, I wonder what, you know, I presume Georgia Bell's going to try go for the 1500 indoors. But the 3K now, you've got Melissa Courtney Bryant, you've got Georgia Bell, who's hit a standard, you've got Hannah Nuttall, who hit a standard, at least Dorna hit a standard as well. So, and who knows what Laura Muir's up to. So there's going to be a lot of women inside that Euro Indoor 3000 standard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it depends how they want to shape their seasons, because that is the one where you're like, yeah, Georgia Bell obviously probably would make sense to run the 15 in terms of like medal chances now, but in terms of like longevity throughout this summer, she can get on the 3K team indoors. Potentially gives her a bit more like space to work in the summer. Like, she doesn't have to start doing some of that 1500 work just yet. But she obviously did a little kind of promo vid with Sport Shoes quite recently. They were out with M11. And she's basically said, look, this year is all about medals. Presume that she's going to get her in whatever races where she thinks she can medal, because you think Georgia Bell's got a chance to, yeah, medal a lot this year, and she's got to capitalize after last year as well.
And yeah, you mentioned Westy. A little bit further back in that race was Neil Gourley, 7:49. And I guess like that's the kind of classic season openers you're used to seeing. But in this occasion, he's, you know, 19 seconds behind Koskar, and he won the race in 7:30, who was, yeah, I mean, that was a great breakout performance for him. And he's obviously, well, we think he's training alongside Westy now, and those two are linking up. So they're a force to be reckoned with. I want to see at the national championships, James West feat George Mills in a 3000 tactical race. on the line, who wins? You know, that's the race we want come Feb the 22nd or something, basically.
I mean, the way Mills ran last night.
Yeah, you'd say Mills wins hands down at the moment.
Do you know what I mean?
You know,
the thing is though, right? So I think if Mills, and obviously this is just me speculating, but if Mills took it into his own hands and was like, okay, well, I'm the quickest guy here, and if I make it quick, no one's gonna beat me. I think he does win. I also think Mills is the sort of guy that in his head is thinking, well, I can win this race if it's 8:10, I can win it anywhere, like anyway. So we'll be happy to be chilling around. And not pushing it on. And I think if he does that, then yeah, you play a guy like Westy in there big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they both need the sort of indoor champs just to practice for, you know, European indoors and world indoors as well. Cause you know, you don't get many chances to practice those tactical races now.
Mm.
But you know, I'll be interested to see who actually wants to go and do the world indoors and how many pros, you know, want to get after it. So anyway, a few more, let's just wrap up a few more Brits. I mean, we put the graphic out. There was a lot of races going down. Jack Higgins, 148 over in Ghent. Solid run for him. You mentioned Adam Fogg. Piers Copeland obviously won the 1500 last year, 354 mile. Tyler Billyard, 352 mile. That was solid. I mean, he's putting his name in the ring to get that 1500 Q. What is the mile conversion actually? Because they did do a...
It's quite harsh, I think, the mile conversion. And quite right, too.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Unless they got a split. They might have got a split in Boston, you know.
Point. Sorry, we can't give you guys that information now. I'll talk with George Wheeler. You know, his fastest win. Charlie Wheeler went and ran 744 in the same race as Mills. And that was unfortunate. I mean, he just consistently comes so close to these qualifying standards, but can never quite get them over the line. Let's hope he changes that. Because obviously that 743 Euro standard. Someone who did get that, by the way, was Henry McCluckey, 741. But yeah, 741.9 McCluckey ran in Boston. So
yeah.
Quick update for you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that wraps up all the results. But mate, more indoor action on the way. Miro's games come in on the 8th of Feb. So so this weekend. So loads to look out for.
The men's 3000, absolutely stacked. I mean, you've got Mohamed, Edwin Kergat, Adrian Wildtrud, Gressier obviously ran 13 flat in Boston, Cooper Tier, Stuart McSwain, Ollie Hawkeye, Robinson. It's ridiculous. These guys were just additions to obviously the Cole Hocker, Grant Fisher matchup that we're going to get. So the men's 2000 at Millrose is disgusting. It's almost like you have to have broken 13 to even get into that race. What, women's 3000, Liz Courtney Bryant is going to do it as well. I mean, Sarah Healy, by the way, ran very well in Boston. So she's obviously hanging around for another week to do the Millrose Games. And they're going to be up against, I guess, some even faster women in the likes of, you've got Gebre Selassie, the Ethiopians, Carissa Schweitzer. But I'm looking at it thinking, Liz Courtney Bryant can go just win that again, to be honest. There's no one she should be scared of when she's just run a bloody, you know, 8:28. Men's 800, I mean, Bryce Hopple and Hui, that's going to be a good matchup. Mark English is in there. And then, of course, we have Josh Kerr and the Goose who go for it in the mile. Kessler's in the mile. Habs is in the mile. Gourley's in the mile. Pietro's in the mile. So, yeah, some big, big lineups. And in the women's mile, Georgia Bell, Jess Hull, Nikki Hilt, Maya Ramson's in there. Elise Cranny's in there. Sinclair Johnson. So actually, we're going to see how Bell operates over the mile and obviously head-to-head with Hull too. So, yeah, that's just some of the big names doing for Millrose. So, we look forward to that. And then a few days after that is Levan, which we think Jakob and co, that is usually a very, very big meet on the World Tour gold label. And also, I think Metz is Saturday as well. So, we'll see a lot more Brits out there.
Yeah, and this is where indoor, even more so than outdoor, I think you just... It's so hard to follow.
There's a lot of races.
There's no, like, outdoor, you almost have, apart from like Prefontaine, right? And I guess this year we might have it with the Grand Slams, but primarily the races are in Europe. If you follow that Diamond League scene and then a few other kind of low key meets that are kind of notoriously quick, and then you're okay. But indoor, people are all over the shop. And You just don't know where the next quick time is going to pop off. So you got to feel for the athletes in a way, because like if you don't know where it's going to run so quick, or like who's going to be where, like picking and choosing your races must be horrendous. Of course, unless you're someone like you just mentioned, Jakob there, where you can go do it any way you want. But yeah, we'll see how it unfolds. And then obviously, like you mentioned, mate, towards the end of Feb, we'll have that British champs, and then closest to them, we'll know who's in for a real shot making some of those teams. One thing we haven't mentioned, obviously, don't want to give her too much coverage, but Shelby Houlihan, she's back. She's been getting a bit of, well, I mean, Flow Track have been getting a bit of hate on socials, to be fair, for covering her return to running, and you can kind of see why. But she ran 8:31, 3K. Going to be interesting to see how she gets on. Like,
yeah, get her in the Milrose field. Get a late entry in the Milrose field. No, it's a weird one. Like, I think with the Shelby case, like that, there's a documentary you mentioned, Flow Track. I think that actually came out yesterday. I probably watched that at some point in the next couple of days, and you know, and see what it's like. But yeah, it's, you know, I think you have the ones, you know, one half of people are like, oh yeah, she's done the time, like let her just be, you know, who she wants to be now, and just, you know, get over it. And then you have the other half of like, yeah, she should be, you know, not even in the sport, abandoned. And to be honest, I am on that side of the fence when it comes to Shelby. Like, I am on the side of, look, you know, I think these bans should be 8 years, lifetime bans, so actually people's career is just over. But yeah, you listen to a few pros and they're actually fine with it. Like, I was alarmed when I listened to the Coffee Club podcast, and like Morgan McDonald and Ollie Horan are sitting there and they're kind of going, oh, we know Shelby, we know the people, like we really trust them, and therefore we trust Shelby. And I'm just thinking, what? Like, but and we're not in the know. Like, we are far from in the know. We are on the outside when it comes to this sort of thing. But I am just like, she's been done. There was something in her system. It doesn't come from nowhere. And like, no one else really has this trouble. Like, all are just baffling. But obviously Jerry Schumacher was at this meet in Arkansas. Yeah, he took his Oregon team over there. Is he taking his Oregon team because he knew Shelby was going to be there, or did Shelby go because she knew Jerry was going to be there? Hey.
I mean, I'm not being funny, right? Shelby getting bussed for drugs was the beginning of the end of the BTC.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Like, I mean, it's big time.
Yeah, it's splintered.
In the years that followed, they're all dispersed.
But it's weird when elite athletes support a drugs cheat. I don't get it. Anyway, but she's going to be around now, and you know, she's going to be with that sort of shape. She's going to be at the World Championships. You'd think in 2025 in Tokyo. Yeah. You know, she might even be at the bloody World Indoor Championships. Who knows what her plans are, but yeah, we'll have to get used to Shelby being around. Yeah, I just wonder if she'll get the hate that Gatlin got, because he got so much hate.
Mm-hmm.
So much hate, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I imagine, say, we see Katir back in a few years' time.
Mate, it's the same thing. Katir didn't even have anything to say. He's drugs whereabouts and tampering, right?
Yeah.
So, which is just as bad, but she actually had something in her system.
Right.
So, mate, Katir, oh God, yeah, he gets absolutely, and I think Shelby should be held to the same sort of level that people are going after Katir, to be honest, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, people should have forgotten, because to be fair, at the time, people were going in, but I think, yeah, just 4 years out and people were sort of, yeah, but yeah, I couldn't see that happening to Katir in 4 years' time, so, but anyway, that's enough of that. But yeah, she's back, and so like Matt says, we'll have to get used to that. But thanks for listening, guys. Loads of races for you all to look forward to, so enjoy those, and we'll catch you very soon with our next guest episode as well.